Hello, I'm Dan.
I'm Simon.
And this is the Wikicast, a podcast where Wikipedia takes us to a random article each week and we talk about what we find. Simon, what are we talking about this week?
Daniel, this week we are talking about Him Sing.
Him Sing. Oh my God.
Talking about Him Sing was a Canadian television series produced in Winnipeg, Manitoba for CBC Television. The program featured hymns, spirituals, and inspirational music sung by a 16-voice choir.
Oh my God.
So
it's a sign. This is a sign on the day of Evensong, the day I'm conducting Evensong.
Well, there we go. That's us talking about the article done. What Evensong are you talking about, Dan?
Exeter University singers are going to be singing Evensong in Exeter Cathedral at 5:30 today. When this podcast goes out, you might miss it, but if you're quick, you might be able to catch us just in time. It's very exciting. I can't wait. We're doing the Trinity Te Deum, which I don't think we've mentioned much about because, you know, it's an all right piece of music, but oh my God, yeah, it's going to be so, so exciting.
I mean, do you want to talk about it? Because I'm actually, so full disclosure, I popped home from the office to record at lunchtime today, and I'm currently eating my lunch. Do you want to talk about why you're excited about it? I'm just gonna chow down on my my rice, steamed vegetables, and oven baked haddock.
Lovely.
Go for your life.
Yeah. So, as far as kind of like the music for Evensong, I've mentioned the Trinity Te Deum, which is probably one of my favourite pieces, just because it's big and loud and exciting.
Heard it in the vlogs because it is secret to be unveiled. It is the theme for the Base One Beer Mile. Every time that the Base Ones do anything boozy, that's the music you heard.
In a different key.
Because I didn't want to get copyright struck.
Yeah. But yeah, it's an amazing, amazing piece of music. We're also doing Philip Stopford's Truro Canticles, written for Truro Cathedral, which are a kind of chapel choir favourite. So we're going to be doing those with singers, and they're sounding really good. And we've got a nice juicy psalm to do as well, which is one of the big parts of service. And the Smith responses, Ubi Caritas, De Ruffle, as the introit.
Oh, you're doing the introit. Nice.
Yeah. And we're doing final responses too, which is interesting.
So instead of the... explain to the readers what that is.
So the structure of an Evensong service is introit. You sing a little bit at the beginning, and then the priest will give an intonation. O Lord, open thou our lips, usually, and that's when the precies start, which are part of the responses. So you have those ones, and then you chill out for a bit, and then we sing a psalm, which is a text set to... how would you explain how a psalm works as far as its music? It's very strange.
It's basically, the text comes from the song, the book of songs from the Bible. So the text is pretty juicy a lot of the time, and you get weird shit all the time, like Moab is my washpot, but also the Lord shall bring thunder and destruction down upon the heathens and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But when it's written down musically, basically it's a repeating structure. It's the same ba 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 ba. Ba da 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 ba 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 would be like, I don't know, but I just made that up on the spot. And then what you'd sing those notes, but the duration varies depending on the text that you sing. So I think the first one I did was like ba 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 ba. That might be like Lord open thou, or it might be like Lord, or it might be, hang on, what was the note I started on? Lord open thou our lips, like it might basically the note is the same every time you cycle through a line. It'll be the same, well, in a line of normally two lines you'll have like it'll be split, it'll repeat, but yeah, the duration of each note will vary, and it's quite difficult to read when you're starting out. It's a very weird notation.
It's very, very strange. It's really cool though, you know, they're so exciting, and they're really oftentimes, as Simon mentioned, the text is so dramatic, it almost become, you know, they're almost kind of treated as a piece of theatre. You know, it gets really... we're singing, it's the 26th evening. So the chants that we're doing, because the chants will vary, you don't have one chant throughout the whole thing. So within the psalm, we should explain actually that the reason that our chants are slightly different is because they're Anglican chants. So rather than just having kind of like plain song, which you'd associate with like Gregorian chant or something, which is very much kind of every, there's no harmony really, it's all just what kind of one unison line sung.
Yeah, if you think about like Halo, the music from Halo, that's Gregorian chant.
Yeah. But it's really, yeah, it's really exciting. We've got some really, really, really good music, and it's meant to be, today's meant to be really well attended, so I can't wait. I'm getting to the cathedral a little earlier to rehearse with the one, the only Dr. Edward Jones, to make sure that the Trinity Te Deum is all in in order. Excuse me.
Oh, you're still dying from last week, I see.
Oh yeah. I feel much better though. I think the reason that I wasn't too great last week is because I had my jab as well. I had my shot at work. So I think that's kind of wearing off now, which is nice. We also had a massive chapel social last night. So
if I sound surprised, a little more gravelly. Because I didn't go because I'm insanely busy at the moment. Like I just had a bunch more work dropped on my plate. I didn't go, but I know Dan did. It was a villains social, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
What did you go
as? It was indeed. I went as, well, for some context, Corin went as Voldemort.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I'd go as his villain. So I went as Harry.
So you went as a hero to a villain's...
Yes. Yes. It was awesome. It was also, I mean, I would have, if I had any free time, I would have actually planned a costume, but a Harry Potter costume is quite easy to throw together. It's just, you know,
when you look just like Harry Potter.
Basically, yeah. Including a really crappily drawn scar with a Sharpie marker on my forehead. So nailed that.
So just before we move on, well, we should probably talk about the wiki article for a bit. I pulled up my favourite psalm text, which is Psalm 147. Some of you might be aware of this. I'm just going to go through a few passages from this, which never fail to basically make us almost not sing. Like, I don't think we've ever completely failed. We never completely burst out laughing. But Danny Baker gave it a good go. So starting to read at the 8th verse, you have, he covers the... Oh, bloody hell. Great start, Simon. He covers the sky with clouds. He supplies the earth with rain and makes grass go on the hills. He provides food for the cattle and for the young ravens when they call. Now that's fine.
That's quite nice. Yeah.
Pretty normal. Then... His pleasure is not in the strength of the horse, nor his delight in the legs of the warrior. Now, that's often translated as, nor shall he delight in any man's legs. And there's also, like, there's something in there in another translation about the grass for the herb for the use of men, or something like that. And it's
pipeweed.
Yeah, finest weed in the South Valley.
Yeah.
So I feel like we should probably at least talk about the article more for more than 10 seconds.
I think so, maybe.
Led on to talk about Evensong because we're all terribly excited, and I'm going to go and I'm excited to hear this because I never heard it live before, so it should be quite something. So Hymn Sing, I've already said it was a program that featured our favourite kind of music, hymns, spirituals, and... Actually, no, to be fair, it sounds shit. Hymns, spirituals, and inspirational music doesn't sound like the kind of thing that we normally do. We actually do good music. But it ran for 30 years.
So is it like the Canadian version of Songs of Praise?
Songs of Praise, I think so. I think it's exactly that.
For readers who don't know, there's a TV show that's been going on for decades in the UK called Songs of Praise. I think it's currently being presented by Alan Jones of treble fame.
From the Snowman.
Yeah, exactly. Walking in the Air from the Snowman. He didn't.
No,
he didn't do the solo in that.
And this is actually a point that's in the CD notes for our Christmas CD that I want to get changed because it isn't correct to say that he did it in the film.
No, because he didn't. Cheeky bugger.
I don't know who did, but it was some unknown soloist. Well, no, we do know him. We don't. Can't remember his name. But Alan Jones did it on the CD single that's like played on the radio at Christmas. Yeah. Whereas the person in the film is somebody different. And I want to correct Andrew Millington about this one, who's a great, amazing godfather of music in Exeter. He's been director of music at the Cathedral for... God knows how long. He also, we do have a bone to pick with, because do you remember we did a Christmas concert once? It was a private gig, and we were rehearsing, and we were doing a piece called Alleluia by Wishart, and we sort of ran through, and then our musical director Michael turned to Andrew, this great esteemed grey-haired figure. He was sort of on the organ, ready to accompany us for something else, and said, "What do you think?" And he just looked at him and was like, "Do you really want to know? Like, I think it's too bad to fix at this point." And we were like, "Oh, well, all right."
Yeah, jeez, it sounded really good too. Like,
it did, very, and it will sound great on CD. Plug, plug, plug.
plug. It's a huge piece. It's like a very, it's chapel choir at our loudest and fastest and just a little bit crazy. And yeah, it's good though.
Yeah, to quote Ed Dunn, P stands for powerful, right?
Mm.
Like, yeah. It only goes up from there. Yeah, Songs of Praise has been going for God knows how long. Actually, I'm going to Google that quickly because do you reckon it's been longer than 30 years?
Yeah.
Here we go. It has been airing since 1961.
There you
go. So, 56 years. My PhD in maths had to work that one out quickly. 2,300 episodes. Jesus. Well, quite appropriately, actually. It's not presented by Ada Jones. Since 2016, it's been presented by Bill Turnbull.
Ah, yes. Old Billy. Old Willie Turnbull. Yeah.
Who I don't know who that is.
I
don't honestly care. Him saying it's actually quite a short article. I guess this wasn't particularly well loved. But apparently it was the same choir every time. The thing about Songs of Praise is you go from location to location and listen to different music. Whereas this seems to be the same choir, including one guy who was in every show apart from two.
Wow.
So that's God, that must have been boring. But yeah, that's the extent of the article, unfortunately. That is as much as we had to work with. It's in Canada. It had 30 seasons and it ran for 30 minutes. And wow. It stopped airing in May 1995, which was before you were born?
Yes, 2 years before I was born.
Oh, God. I was in school when it finished airing.
I'm such an old man. It's so weird.
I am such an old man. Hang on. I'm just going to finish off this last mouthful of green beans. Hang on. Give me a minute.
Ooh.
Wow, so many vitamins. Mm. Wait, there's a bit of rice left. Hang on. Let me just I'm just gonna.
Oh, not scratchy plate stuff.
Oh, here we go.
No thanks. Oh, please make it stop. Oh God. No, thank you.
Right. So it's rude to talk with your mouthful. So I'm just gonna do it anyway. So last night, speaking of being an old man, I think I've injured myself. Basically, I think I've actually hurt one of my legs because. Bit of news, Pixel Girl and I are going to be running a half marathon. We've signed up to do Cambridge half marathon next year.
Very exciting.
We've both been doing a bit of running, and with this as motivation, I've been upping the distance. So I did a very fast, for me, 10K late last week. I did it in, it was like 48:20 or something like that. And I was very pleased with that. My legs hurt quite a bit afterwards. And then... I went for a run with Pixel Girl and Dr. Jones, everyone's favourite Scottish PhD holding organist. And we did 8 miles of really, really hilly bit by the coast, which was gorgeous views, but my legs really, really hurt. Anyway, I'm going to frame the story of my run last night as something funny that happened, but it was legit quite scary. Because I went out for this run and I thought, well, my legs are hurting a bit. I'll just sort of ease it out. I'll go nice and easy. Went down by the river. And the thing to remember at Exeter, so normally where you run in Exeter, it's quite well lit. It's the middle of a city. And the exception to that is down by the river. It's nice and flat. And there are lights around, but it's quite an isolated bit of the city, really. Like, if I was a criminal and I wanted to do a business deal, I'd go there, basically.
Yeah.
I got down to the river, and I got to a bit called Mill on the X, where there's a whacking great big bridge, and it's basically a turning off point where if you think you can't go any further on the run, you can kind of stop there and just turn back. And I got there and I felt a really big pain in my legs. I could barely walk. So I stopped my running app, and then I was like, oh God, right, okay. What I do it after every run is take a terrible selfie to remind myself that I've been doing exercise. I did that and I look up and I am knackered. Like in terms of like breathing, I'm okay, but like my legs are f***ing on fire. And I look up and then a bunch of gentlemen about a couple of years younger than me, probably like early 20s, in like hoodies, hoods up, and like trackies and stuff like that, and a few of them had skateboards, just kind of appeared out of the gloom. And I was stood there and I clearly looked like a runner who was just like done, completely done, like sweaty and just like barely moving.
Yeah.
And they kind of loomed out of the shadows and started coming towards me, and I was like, oh, for God's sakes, all right, I'm gonna have to look like I'm not done with running. Let's go across the bridge and keep going, because I thought, this is probably, I'm probably fine. This is probably just a coincidence. I then ran across the bridge and got to the other side, and I stopped running and I sort of started walking. And then I turned around and one of the guys had followed me on a skateboard and like kind of come up quite close behind me. And I was like, oh God. Because the next step, if you want to go from there back to the back to where I live, is up a very, very, very steep set of steps. Do you know the ones in me?
Oh yeah. Really yeah. steep. Yeah, they are.
It's like basically a ladder. It's very, very steep. And so I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to keep running. And then with my legs completely dead, I was like, okay, let's look like this is what we plan to do. And I went all the way up to the top of these stairs, and then sort of stopped and looked back. And the guy had followed me again. Again, this might be a complete coincidence, but I definitely felt like if I'd stopped, this guy was going to mug me and like take my phone. So I just kept running. And I was just like, fuck me. My legs really hurt by this point. And then I made it into town. I made it to Mosaic, which is a club in the middle of Exeter. And I was like, okay, no one's going to try anything here. Like, there's way too many people around. It's lit. It's fine. And then just as I stopped, a bunch of massive rugby lads came out. And it was Wednesday in town, which meant that everyone was dressed up in like sports gear. And they were, I think they might have been being kicked out because they were too drunk. And they kind of came out and they looked at me and I was like, oh, for God's sake. If I stop here, you're definitely going to, oh, right, I guess I'm running again. So I ran from there back to my house. I got back here and I could barely stand up. I've never been in so much pain in my legs in my entire life. But I guess the moral of the story is I could have kept running. I just needed the motivation of potentially being stabbed. But I feel like an old man today. I've got some deep heat next to me. And rubbing that into my legs lovingly.
Oh, God. So, Steady on.
Yeah, I know, right? Don't get that on your butthole. Oh, my God. I have gotten so much trouble for that before. I feel like an old man, basically. That's my story about nearly getting mugged, potentially. I love the fact that you sound very, very concerned throughout the whole story safety.
I have raised this issue with you before when... If you're going running on an evening, I think that possibly the worst place to go and run is down near the river. Because, as you say, it's very isolated and not especially well lit.
Well, the issue is, the only time this has become a problem is when I stopped running. And up until now, I've not had to stop running by the river.
Yes, that's true.
You know, like, normally, I'm going faster than anybody. Like, if you're a criminal trying to catch me... Yes, I'm tired on the run, but I am fundamentally equipped with running gear. Like, I am literally equipped as to go as fast as is possible. So I don't think it's an issue. At least I didn't until I stopped. So, thanks for your concern there, mate. That's
all right. No, don't worry about it. That's really fine. Touching. You know, I'm here to look out for you, you know, and take the piss.
Yeah, well, but that's what friends are for. That is what friends are for.
Oh, God.
You're right.
Yes, no, I'm fine. I'm just having a stretch.
You look like you were rubbing yourself on bits of furniture or something, like a cat would. You're just like scratching your back on the back of the chair.
Like a cat would. If anyone's going to do anything like a cat, it's not me.
This is true.
Oh, speaking of cats, your that photo, did we discuss it last week?
I don't think we did, no. God, this is the Simon Tells Stories podcast. It was 2 weeks ago now. Basically, I bumped into a cat on the way home from work, and I'd had a pretty crappy day. I was just really tired. And I knelt down. As you know, if you kneel to pet, like a small cat or dog or Dan, you go on one knee just to kind of get more level with it so you're not so intimidating. And this cat, after a few seconds of being scritched behind the ears, just got up on my knee and was like kind of getting close to me and scent marking me. And I was like, oh, that's good grief, you're friendly. And then he just leapt up from, like, climbed up me like a climbing frame, up from my knee, up onto my shoulders. And I was like, it was one of those moments where you're just not sure what to do.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, what is the right thing to do here? Do I just stay here until he's done? But then a bunch of other students came along and started petting him when he was on my shoulders. And one of the guys was like, what are you going to name him? Because he's yours now, I think. So he's called Alex. He was a very Alexy cat. I stood up and he was perfectly happy, just like a parrot. Literally, imagine like Long John Silver, the cat on his shoulder, just judging the world from up there. So I was sort of eventually put him down. I was like, off you go. And he just tried.
You eventually
off.
Put him down just for climbing up on your shoulders.
It was the kind thing to do. He caught.
That's harsh, man. That's really harsh.
Yeah, but yeah, sometimes it's the kindest thing to do, really.
Mm. Especially like when the cat is completely fine and, you know, like loving life. It's the only.
It's like when you see a singer really, really nailing a solo in their mind, but it's really going badly, and you just had to pull them from the CD, and it's like it's the kind thing to do.
It is the kind thing to do.
That actually is the drama. That is related to the work that I've been dropped, because you know how the University of Exeter Chapel Choir has a Christmas CD coming out, and it is being designed by our friend Lana, who I don't think you ever meet. It's not being designed by her anymore. It's being designed by me, because apparently it still hasn't been designed and it needs to be designed in the next couple of days. So guess who's learning how to use Photoshop properly and is designing a whole CD, including the like booklet. It's going to be great. Yeah. It's going to be fine.
What's it called again?
Mary Corrin, isn't it?
Mary Corrin, yeah.
We did a poll. We did a poll.
I personally voted for Xmas, spelled E-X-E-M-A-S.
I think it's going to be called O Night Divine or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's right. Christmas with the University of Exeter Chapel Choir or something like.
Yeah, I think Mary Corrin is better because Corrin is just the perfect person.
Mm.
Oh my god, I'm so tired. I am really struggling to be engaging,
Christmas music though. We've just been talking about Christmas and Christmas.
We can't
things.
Talk about choir stuff all podcast. Like, yes, this podcast is called Hymn Sing, but people don't just tune in for that. They tune in for the witty, sparkling banter and what else are they tuning for?
Oh god, I don't know. Casual abuse,
racism, poor accents, and fan correspondence. Actually, on the topic of fan correspondence, what did you think of Blade Runner 2049, Dan?
I absolutely loved it, Simon. I thought it was really, really good. I liked that bit when he was running with the blades and bumped into those 49 other people who did that as well.
So, great Dan, 2049, or 2048 other people that did it, I suppose. Yeah, Dan still hasn't seen the film, despite the fact that we said we were going to do a film review episode. So
we did. In my defence, I just don't have any time. I literally have nothing. We were meant to go and see Thor the other night.
Was it? You didn't go because you were getting bevved. Like, I called you from the cinema and I'm like, mate, are you gonna make it? And you were like, yeah, I'm with the GNS people. I was like, okay.
It was
mate,
with
we'll talk tomorrow.
It was a work party actually, which is why I wanted to go.
It was
to go.
Both.
I wanted to bond.
You said that you went party, and then you and then you went home, and then you went to another party. Yeah bullshit. You too busy.
I had to do GNS, so I went and rehearsed them, and then that finished at 9, and then I went to this party, and yeah.
So basically, Dan hasn't seen Blade Runner 2049, and we've only had a few emails actually, so we'd encourage you to go and watch Blade Runner. I personally would definitely encourage you to watch Blade Runner 2049 because I thought it was excellent. It's not doing very well in the box office, and it deserves to be seen on the big screen. Do go and see it, and email. Hang on, I'm gonna burp. Do email us with your film reviews. It's been a while since I've done that, like two episodes. Email us with your film reviews at spongyelectric@gmail.com. And we'll next episode, because Dan will have watched it by the next episode.
I will,
right?
I will. Yeah, definitely, because we've got all that free time over the weekend. Oh, wait. Bath.
Yeah. Oh, God, it must be so difficult. I can't imagine how busy you must be at the moment.
I don't know whether to take the bait. I'm fully prepared to give a breakdown of what my days are in the week, and
this isn't a criticism of how much stuff you've got going on. It's very much a comment on how much stuff I've got going on. But yeah, Dan will have watched it by then, and we will be doing an episode. We will hold back on that. I did also go and see Thor. I imagine you are going to go and see Thor at some point.
I really want to see Thor. Yeah, there's actually there's a work. Film club, they're going to go and see it tonight, but obviously I can't go because rehearsal for chapel, which is very sad.
I went with our friend Michael, and you know how when you go and see a film with somebody and they're just really not into it, it kind of kills the enjoyment for you. But apart from the fact that he didn't really get into it, I have to admit, it's got like, what has it got on Rotten Tomatoes? It's done really, really well. And it might just be that I'm completely wrong. Yeah, it's 99%.
Apparently it's very funny. Apparently, it's very funny.
Yeah, it's 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. I've been told it's very funny, and the consensus says that it's a new standard for the franchise. I was really quite disappointed, actually. I thought that it really... again, this might be because I went to see it late. I went to see it at 11, and I went to see it with somebody who wasn't really into it. But I felt it was... it just missed the mark. Like, it, you know how, like, with Guardians, for example, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which we saw, and I saw recently, and it just... it drags you into the way that the world works and the level of humor and, you know, what you're expecting from it. And it just... it's just funny. Like, it hits that groove and it stays in it. I felt like Thor just kept moving around, and I thought it was... really quite... I thought it was the weakest film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I'm fully prepared for people to come at me with email reviews, and I would encourage you to email. Because it might well be that I just had a bad experience watching it, but I thought that the villain was incredibly weakly introduced. I thought that was actually quite... the first act was very sloppy filmmaking. Because basically it's two stories in parallel. It's the story of Ragnarok, which is the rebirth of the Norse homeland, Asgard. And it's the storyline Planet Hulk, where Hulk is a gladiator on a planet. This isn't spoilers, this is in the trailer. You're basically flitting... it's like, meanwhile, back at the ranch in its purest form, like, you've just got two stories that keep flicking back towards. The problem is, one of those stories, and I'll give you a hint, it's not the one that has the Hulk in, is just incredibly weakly done. And every time you head back, you're just like, oh, God, here we go again. Like,
I don't understand how that Hulk thing works.
How do you mean?
How is he a gladiator on another planet?
Well, this isn't a spoiler. Again, this is...
is this a separate timeline to his Avengers like timeline?
No. It isn't a spoiler to say at the end of Avengers: Age of Ultron, you see him in the Quinjet. The film basically says he just kind of kept going on and up and up and up and just kind of kept going because he wanted to get away from everybody, which he did. He ended up on an alien world. It didn't really explain anything more than that.
So tenuous at best.
Tenuous at best. But it's the most fun part of the movie. In fact, Thor versus Hulk in the arena very much reminded me of the first Pokemon movie with, like, Mewtwo in the arena. I don't know. I want to be wrong, but I just... yeah. I thought it didn't work. Like, there are some very, very funny moments in it. And the director, is it Ken Watiti? What's the guy's name? Oh, no, Taika Waititi. He has a role in it, which I think is the funniest. One of the funniest characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's also a few very nice cameos, but because obviously Stan Lee gets a cameo like he always does, but there are some famous actors that have cameos in this one all in one scene, and that was very funny. It didn't resonate with me, basically. And maybe I went in with too high expectations. Also, elements of it were fantastic. Like, there's a scene with a bunch of Valkyries, which is in the backstory of the character that Cate Blanchett plays.
Yes.
Oh, I wanted to like it so much. Like, I went to see at the Campus Cinema, I saw Spider-Man Homecoming, Spooderman.
I recently watched that for the first time.
It's excellent. I thought that was fantastic. And I wanted the same from this. But, oh, man.
That's a shame.
Yeah, okay, shame. Should we talk about how fantastic Spooderman was?
Yeah, oh, man, I was so impressed. I've been wanting to see it for ages, but again, I'm just never really getting around to doing it. So I finally caught up and just said, like, right, I'm going to, you know, treat myself of an evening, upstairs, in bed, on the laptop.
And then he watched a film.
Cup of tea. Yeah, exactly. Then I came downstairs and watched the film. And it was just, it's a really well-made film. It's really well-written. It's funny. It balances the kind of, you know, the whole point of Spider-Man is that, you know, he's the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and that smaller worldview while combining this greater world with Tony Stark. And
he's not fighting a big blue laser in the sky. He's fighting an arms dealer. It nails the character of Spider-Man. It's the best Spider-Man since... well, I think it's probably the best Spider-Man film ever, actually. I think the ones that you could compare it to most closely are Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi film, which is much more a comic book film. This kind of felt like it was the kiddie entrance into a relatively bland franchise at the end of the day. It wasn't as strongly characterized as Sam Raimi's, because Sam Raimi's as a director is just nuts. But I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was much funnier than Thor Ragnarok, actually. It wasn't as fun. I still think Guardians 2 is or maybe Guardians 1 is the funniest in the series. But
because we're looking forward to what am I thinking about? Infinity War.
Yeah, and we got Black Panther to look forward to as well. Mm-hmm. The trailer for which looks nuts. Looks so cool. Yeah, really, really excited.
And the Last Jedi. Oh man, there's so many.
I have deliberately not seen the trailer for The Last Jedi. I've seen the teaser trailer, but I've avoided it because I just want to. It's that classic thing of like, I watched the Episode 7 trailer endlessly, and it was a problem when you're watching the movie because you think, oh, this scene hasn't happened yet. Like, I know that this character isn't in peril at this point because there's this scene coming, and it kind of ruins the film. Although interestingly, I did read something recently that says that if you actually know spoilers for a film, it means that you enjoy it more when you watch it for the first time, which I thought was kind of weird.
Yeah,
but I deliberately stayed clear. Can you tell, dear readers, that we are massive film dorks?
It's so exciting, and I think too, especially the thing that's really, really getting me for The Last Jedi. Excuse me, The Last Jedi, is it's constantly there's constantly kind of rumors banding around on the internet that there's a twist, there's a huge twist, and it's, we just don't know what it's going to be, and it's going to be like a love or hate kind of thing, and I'm like, I'm calling it now,
Luke's going to become a villain. I'm just going to throw it out there.
I think he must, you know, the way that they've, you know, it's in his blood, isn't it? It's in his blood.
And it's the classic point about the film poster, like, you know, he's in the back, looks like a villain. He is also a terrorist who destroyed, like, how many million people in a terror attack on two space stations. Actually, no, one space station. He only blew up the one space station, actually. You know, from a certain point of view, he is the bad guy. And he always has been. And now he's going to become the good guy. So, really, it's how you view the Star Wars universe.
That's very exciting, though.
There is a lot of stuff coming out. I remember we actually had a chat about this, I think, earlier in the year, about what was coming out. And we were sort of talking about how excited we were for Dunkirk and for Blade Runner. Still haven't seen Wonder Woman.
I still
haven't seen Wonder Woman.
No, likewise.
I haven't seen Get Out. Oh, the Justice League. Oh, yay. really, really excited.
I really want to see Mother, too.
Oh, the Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah. I just want to see it. I want to see and experience it for myself.
Oh, John Wick Chapter 2. That's coming out this year. Because I haven't seen the first John Wick, but I've heard it's excellent.
What's the one? Is it The Dark Tower or something?
That's on at the Campus Cinema. That? It's on at the Campus Cinema on Sunday. So if you get back, you might be able to see it.
Okay.
What I was going to say was Geostorm. Because I asked people on my Twitter if I should do a scientific movie review of Geostorm, and like it had like over 100 likes. So I guess that's the thing I'm doing now. So that's another thing to add to my pile of things to do, along with design a whole CD's artwork, edit all the videos from Symphonic Evensong and two videos for my channel, and do a book review of all the books I've been reading recently, including Turtles All the Way Down. I'm also doing Geostorm.
Speaking of Symphonic Evensong, I finally got around to when we were at... So the way that this chapel social worked last night is that all the guys got together, the gents of chapel and all the ladies of chapel, and we started separately, and then we all met up at the Imperial, which was really fun. But Michael had brought his phone, and he had some of the audio. So we put it into, granted, pretty crap speakers, but I finally got to hear Dyson and Dee. And,
Did you not heard it at all Giddy before? Aunt.
No, not at all. As in, not the orchestrated one, like, but yeah, wow, so exciting.
Well, because I sent him the audio, but he hadn't done anything with it in terms of, like, putting it on SoundCloud, so I wasn't sure if anyone had actually heard it. This is the thing with Michael, like...
It's like, yeah, I'd love to get them, actually, if you can send them to me after this.
I should be able to.
I'd love to listen with proper, kind of, you know, not through crappy speakers, so...
Okay. No, that was. Oh God, I'm. Hang on. Let me just for the readers at home. Let me convey how tired I am by one sound effect.
That was commitment. That was real true commitment. Yeah, for readers, that wasn't like a slamming hat. That was a face into desk noise. Jesus, well done. Desk.
Ow.
It's a very method approach there.
I feel like how Bilbo in The Fellowship of the Ring describes himself as like butter spread over too much bread. Like, I feel like if you were to make an Aardman clay puppet of me with like a metal armature in it,
Yeah.
And you cover it in clay. I very much feel like that armature that's been left in a room that's just a little bit too hot. And all the clay is just starting to sag off the bones. And the face is starting to melt. And the eyes are like, there's like an eyelid drooping over one of the eyes.
It's like that scene at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Exactly. Not quite so extreme. I'm not at that point yet. But I am very, 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 very tired at the moment.
That whole death sequence is insane.
Oh, like so for a PG done. Film, it's like pretty intense.
It's just cleverly done too. Like the actual effect itself, I think, is really clever.
All right, okay. This is actually because this podcast has consisted of precisely zero content. Like literally, if anybody who's listened to this has got precisely nothing out of this. Yeah. If you've made it this far, well f***ing done, because I would have turned this off long ago. A video that I've planned and I will do at some point is my favourite films. And seeing as we're talking about films. Now, except I have a somewhat different definition of what favourite means in this context. Because when people say favourite, what they normally mean is basically what you think the best films are.
Mm.
And I don't think that's quite right. I think that favourite means that you can like something that's not necessarily good. You know, like you can enjoy something and recognize that it's not, because otherwise everybody's top five favorite films would be the same. They'll be like Citizen Kane, The Godfather, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, Metropolis, like that ilk, Taxi Driver, whatever.
Yeah.
I think that that's the wrong way to look at it. So my question to you, Dan, is with the criteria of what your top five films that if you were to see they were on TV, like you're just sat at home, you haven't got very much to do, you're browsing through the TV guide and you see they're on TV, what would you drop anything just to watch? Like give me five films that's in that category.
Okay, Nightcrawler.
Ah, excellent film.
That's a superb film. American Beauty.
Yeah, I need to say that.
With Kevin Spacey, because that's, I think, my favourite film of all time. Never Let Me Go, because that film just speaks to me. Like, I remember watching the first time I watched.
Is that the one with Emilia Clarke?
No, that's Never Let Me Go is the one with Andrew Garfield and Kerry Mulligan, and it's written by that Japanese author
Ishiguro,
who just didn't he just win the Nobel Prize for Literature or something?
I think he did. Kazuo Ishiguro.
Yeah, he won it this year, didn't he?
Just described as a writer who, in novels of great emotional force, has uncovered the abyss beneath our illusory sense of connection with the world. In other words, it's exactly the kind of thing that Dan would like.
It's very, very good, and I think I adored the book, and the film is excellent. So the
film's about people who are raised to be organ donors. Is that right? Is that the one?
Yeah.
Okay. Never Let Me Go.
Gosh, I'm not. You know. It's hard, isn't it? Because you've got to think of... I'm trying to think of films that properly speak to me that I know that others maybe just don't kind of like...
But not necessarily. They don't have to be deadly serious, like emotionally connecting films. I think you can like something that is trash. I mean, certainly some of mine are.
No, but I feel like the films that I enjoy most are films where I do derive that kind of a pleasure from, not just kind of like just watching for... You know, because like I can... There's plenty, I don't know, like The Road to El Dorado.
Yeah, you mean you and Ed Dunn the movie.
Yeah, that's great, and I love watching that. In fact, that would probably be in my top five. If I saw that, I'd be like, I'd watch that. I've seen it so many times, but I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, because I've got a top 10 list for this video. I've written it down, but it's in one of my old PhD notebooks, and I'm doodling at the back, so I don't actually have it on file. But I know for me, The Room... is very firmly in my films that I've enjoyed the most. It's almost certainly the worst film I've ever seen. I mean,
and we've got the mockumentary coming out too, haven't we?
Oh, I can't wait! I need to read the book first, The Disaster Artist. I really can't wait. If you haven't seen that, we've already talked about this, I'm sure, but you know, you need to see The Room. The only film, what have I seen that's worse than The Room? I saw Avalanche Sharks, and that was
really
abysmal. Really, really
my
abysmal.
God. Sounds shocking.
Hang on, let me get the synopsis up, because holy shit, it's every bit as bad as it sounds. It's got 2.3 on IMDb, and it's classified as action. Avalanche Sharks tells the story of a bikini contest that turns into a horrifying affair when it is hit by a shark avalanche.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's one of the worst ones I've ever seen. Good God. That and Independence Day Resurgence. I'm not joking when I thought that was one of the worst things I've ever seen. It was genuinely comedically bad.
Yeah.
But The Room is the right level of bad. The Room is wonderful.
Yeah.
That Chicken Run is another one of my absolute favourite films. I love Chicken Run. It's got a very underrated soundtrack. It's incredibly well made. Like I've got huge soft spots for Aardman Animations full stop, but Chicken Run I think is their best film. Really love it.
Definitely.
The Matrix. It's like my go-to incredibly well-directed, slickly written action film. And it's groundbreaking for special effects and all that kind of stuff. What prompted me to say this was Raiders of the Lost Ark. I think that's the ideal B movie. It's just no fat on it whatsoever. All the scenes are there for a precise reason. What else? Airplane is definitely up there as being like.
I haven't seen it.
You've never seen Airplane?
No.
Oh my God! Everybody, please email in and tell Dan to see it.
What is now? I'm trying to think of what. What's his name? It's about like Air Force pilots in America. Really, Top Gun.
I've not seen Top Gun.
No.
Now, to be fair, I actually have.
Apparently, that's kind of one that you've got to see. I've also never seen The Godfather.
Now, I only saw it relatively recently, and I think it is a bit overrated, frankly. I think it's a bit overlong. But you've already seen this. I have a spreadsheet of films that I haven't seen, and it is... As in, not every film, because obviously that's basically just called IMDb, minus a few things.
Yeah.
But I have a list of famous films that I haven't seen, and there are 233 entries. Now, except I've reviewed some of them. For a time, if you can find it, I'd be impressed. I had a movie review blog where I was going through one of these a week, and I just kind of ran out of time. But at the top of the list, the top five are E.T., never seen E.T.
Oh my god.
I know. We started the section by saying, so we're massive film buffs. And it's like, right, so I've never seen E.T. and he's never seen The Godfather. But we're massive film buffs. I've never seen E.T. I've never seen Spirited Away.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Which I know. The thing is, I know I will love almost all the films on this list. I've never seen Grease all the way through.
Yeah, okay.
I've seen bits of it. That's a very you film, isn't it, Grease?
I like Grease.
Yeah, it's very good.
I like Grease. I mean the film, not just like...
Grease me up, woman! I've not seen Back to the Future all the way through. I've not seen Alien.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen Alien a while ago, but...
I've not seen Lawrence of Arabia. Lawrence of Arabia.
Ah, very funny. Witty, clever.
Witty.
Highbrow. Very good.
I'll just go through. I've assigned a fame factor for each of these, so I'll go through just the remaining tens. I've not seen Die Hard, Schindler's List, Fight Club, Taxi Driver, The Big Lebowski, The Sound of Music, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
On that note, I would add to complete my five films if I saw on TV that I would just drop everything for and watch Schindler's List.
Ah. Hmm. Well, I mean, I can't really comment, but I know it's meant to be exceptional.
Yeah, it's also. I'm a sucker for Ralph Fiennes. I think he's a brilliant actor, and he's just superb in that.
That's what I've heard as well. I've loved him enough. Like I really like him as Q. Sorry, not Q. M in the new James Bond. I think he's excellent.
Yeah, and he was superb in Grand Budapest Hotel.
Ah, yes, yeah, very. Did he win an Oscar for that one? I'm gonna make my Simon thinking noise. I'm just gonna Google that one quickly. Because it won a bunch of awards, I know. It was the same year as Birdman.
Same.
No, it won Oscars for best costume design, best makeup and hairstyling, best production design, and best original score.
Yeah,
but Birdman also have excellent films to go against.
Wes Anderson's new film is out soon.
Oh yeah,
it's another stop motion.
Yeah, I haven't seen the trailer for this one. Yeah, I know it's out there, but again,
Isle for Dogs, Isle of Dogs, something about an island with dogs.
I think it's Isle for Dogs. I think the Isle of Dogs is Canary Wharf in London.
Ah, there we go. Sorted.
Because that's that fun fact. That's because the Canary Isles don't get their name from canaries; they get their name from dogs.
There you go.
The film is called Isle of Dogs.
There you go.
It's also the name of the Bozeman.
But it looks really good.
Yeah, it looks very Wes Anderson.
And I love how he's, you know, like his version of Fantastic Mr. Fox. I really, really enjoy. I know it's one of his more Marmitey films. You love it or hate it. In this case, I loved it.
God, that's the cast for Isle of Dogs. You've got Bryan Cranston, Edward Norton, Bill Murray, Jeff Goldblum, F. Murray Abraham, Scarlett Johansson, Tilda Swinton, Harvey Keitel, Liev Schreiber.
That's what you get when you're a director like him. Everyone wants to do your stuff because it is just such, you know, it's so good.
Yeah. Oh, that's actually something just quickly to return to Thor Ragnarok. Jeff Goldblum, who incidentally Michael thought was called Jeff Goldman. He was just like, I think he just gave him a generic Jewish name. Like, it was just Jeff Goldman. He's
excellent. Gold Schwartzman.
Gold Schwartzstein. Yeah, that guy. He's just Jeff Goldblum in the film. It's amazing. It's literally as if they just gave him some lines and he's reading from the script just as him.
Well, that's all he does, though, isn't it?
And it's brilliant. Great.
But he is just he just plays himself in most films.
He's truly great. He's one of my favorite things about that film.
There's actually a prime example of the kind of character that he plays is in I don't know if you saw it, Le Weekend.
Not seen it. No.
It's got. What's the actor's name? This really is going to annoy me. He played Slughorn.
Jim Broadbent.
Yeah, Jim Broadbent, and then some other female actress who was really good, but her name escapes me. Anyway, it's a really, really nice little film. I don't think it did tremendously well at the box office because it was quite small, but it's an excellent piece of work if you want to watch it. But Jeff Goldblum sneaks in there and he's just playing himself. You're like, okay, why not?
He's just been playing himself since Jurassic Park. He's been Goldblooming all over the world. Which is one of my favourite gifts of all time, which is, you know the scene where the main party find a Triceratops?
And it's like the breathing Neill's on the chest character. Is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. And it's like, and he's like, so if you haven't seen this gif, it's Sam Neill's character. They take him from when he's got his head on the chest of the Triceratops, and he's like, oh, it's breathing, like moving up and down. And then they just put that onto him doing that to Jeff Goldblum's chest, where, you know, he has his shirt open completely unnecessarily. But yeah, if I was allowed to put one more thing on my list for the five films, however many it's been by now, X films, would be The Nightmare Before Christmas, which of course now
it's good.
Is
again.
Perfect time to see it because, well, from now until Christmas, it is just the perfect time to see it because I fucking love that film. We've got 2 months of prime Jack Skellington land. You know, it's just the music is amazing. I love the songs. The animation is fantastic. It's a groundbreaking film in that it was the first. Hang on, I'm going to Google that before I say it. I think it's the first feature-length stop-motion animated film. I think it's definitely. It's, you know, it's hugely significant. I'm going to do the voice again. Oh, maybe it's not.
Who directed that again?
Henry Selick. It was kind of came up with. Imagined by Tim Burton, but it was directed by.
I was going to say because I thought that's what it was going to be.
Is this a good film? I thought that was the first stop motion. What was the first stop motion animated feature film? Because there aren't many. Like, you know, Pirates, An Adventure with Scientists, the Aardman one.
Yeah.
It wasn't exactly a flop, but, like, not many people saw it. Still the fourth most successful stop-motion animated film of all time.
It's probably that just because there aren't too many. I mean, thankfully, you know, like, the amazing work with Kubo and the Two Strings.
Oh, God, I love that film. That was fantastic.
Wow. It is Two Strings, right? It's not three.
Yes, Kubo and the Two Strings.
Yeah. That was an amazing film. We went and saw that, didn't we, in cinema?
Yeah, and I think we raved about it all the way home.
Yeah.
Like, literally all the way
Which is what
home.
We tend to do. Even if we like the film or hate the film, that's always what we do.
Yeah.
Like, with the exception of Dunkirk, we didn't speak to each other the entire way home.
Yeah.
And then just got in, sat down on the sofa and went, wow. Like,
yeah, that was really something. Oh, no, okay, this is interesting. The first stop motion, or the first animated film, it was a puppet. It was a stop motion puppet film. Was called El Apostol, which is Spanish for the apostle. It's Argentinian, and it was made in 1917.
Crikey. It's feature length.
It's 70 minutes, so just barely feature length, I think.
Yeah, wow. 1917.
Yeah. Only 14 frames a second, though. Like, very barely. The first one that was over 90 minutes was Czechoslovakian. It was called Old Czech Legends, and I'm not going to try and say it in Czech. But yeah, that was the first one to be over 90 minutes long. The first one that I actually recognized in this list is, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Do I know that one? Oh, wow. That's like, wow. Okay. It was a Christmas special.
Not good.
Yeah. Well, I have to admit, I thought it was, I genuinely thought that it was The Nightmare Before Christmas, but there are so many, so many more before that. There's a whole Wikipedia article, just a list of stop motion films. That's how few there are, that you can actually put them all in one list.
Yeah. God. I'd like to watch that 1917 one, though.
The Nightmare Before Christmas is only 76 minutes long. Wow. Thanks, Owen Wilson.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I love that film so much. In fact, because it's Leica, it's Studio Leica that did Kubo, wasn't it?
I think so.
Because I'm wondering, I'm basically trying to find out which one, because they did The Box Trolls and Coraline, is that right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
The only film I've seen from them, I think, is Kubo. But I really loved it, and I kind of want to go through all their back catalogue. Yeah, yeah, they've done four films: Coraline, Paranorman, Box Trolls, and Kubo.
Okay.
And they've done bits for other films like The Corpse Bride.
Yeah.
Okay. But wow, they've actually, all of their films have been successes. And interestingly, the more they've made, they've made less and less money. That's interesting. Yeah, each one of those films cost $60 million, but Kubo and the Two Strings only made $74.5 million back.
Yeah.
Like, that's so depressing, because it was such an amazing film.
Yeah, and just as a sheer, to actually take it on as a piece of, as film in the making, it's just, insane work.
Have you changed anything on your microphone, by the way? Because I feel like I can hear the sea in your microphone.
You might be able to hear the fans.
Okay. That might not be coming from the recording, dear listeners, but I apologise if it sounds like Dan is broadcasting
from
the
ocean. When you say the sea, describe. Tell me what you can hear. Like, do an impression.
It's like a...
Okay.
Type sound.
I don't know. I was actually going to try and go into detail about what my current recording setup is, but it's so fucking convoluted and ridiculous. I'm not going to do that. makes zero sense. But yeah, I know, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Ah, okay. So basically, whilst we've been talking, I've been looking up a few other animated films because I'm a massive dork. And one of the ones in here that I remember seeing in the cinema and I remember being bloody terrified by was James and the Giant Peach. Did you ever see the animated version of that?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's another one by Henry Selick. But interestingly,
that was a weird film. Weird film.
Do you know some of the people in this, including some of our favourite people, such as the two aunts played by Joanna Lumley and Miriam Margoyles?
Yeah.
Who we both love very much. And it's also got Richard Dreyfuss, Susan Sarandon, David Thewlis. Lupin's in it.
Who does he play?
Cool. Hang on, David Thewlis.
The Grasshopper.
Oh, no, Simon Callow was the Grasshopper, who was in Amadeus. David Thewlis, he was Earthworm.
Yeah.
This was scary. Like, this was, as a kid, there's a scene with, they're like, it's something to do with making fish food. Do you remember the bit I mean? And it's like, it comes out of the ocean, and it's like these rotating things. Horrible.
It's basically like a metal shark, isn't it?
Yeah.
The whole weird sequence with the rhino as the storm, and this rhino coming out of the clouds, and it's comparable to, in every now and then you get a visual sequence which is just weird and creepy and kind of nightmare fuel. I don't know if you've seen A Watership Down.
No, I haven't. I know I need to.
It's an amazing film. But yeah, there's some sequences in that where just the way they do the art style, it's properly like, it shakes you up.
Oh my
god!
I
love that film. That's why we named our dog after one of the rabbits. So
I've just looked up the shark from the mechanical shark from James and the Giant Peach. Jesus Christ, no wonder I was scared.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh my God. Sorry, I did a bit of a Rich Evans thing.
Try and see if you can pull up the, find the rhino.
Hang on, I'm going to send you a picture to, of the shark first. This is great visual storytelling in this podcast. We're just going to talk about images for a bit. But basically, as you probably determined...
We'll provide links in the description.
As you've probably determined by now, really this podcast is Dan and I pissing around, and you just happen to be along for the ride, so you're just going to have to deal with it, I'm afraid. Right, hang on. James the Giant Peach. James the Giant Peach. Rhino. Like... I just, it's a similar thing happened in, do you remember Toad of Toad Hall? And there was the weasels wanted to turn it into a dog food factory or something.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And there's a moment where like, it looks like is it Ratty is going to go into the dog food thing. That shook me up as a kid. I remember being really scared of that.
That's the live action one, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. This rhino thing. I don't remember this. I thought it was like a big mechanical rhino.
There's another actually in the original in the Wind and the Willows, the animated one, not like the puppet one.
Yeah.
There was one. There was like a kind of like a more cartoony almost style. There's a sequence where, Mole is going through, the deep. What's that? Is it the deep dark wood?
That sounds right. Yes.
Yeah, he's going through there, and there's some stuff in there that's really creepy.
Kids like to be scared. I think is the conclusion we could draw. Like, and I think if you look at as a kid, those are the things you remember. Like, there are definitely bits of The Nightmare Before Christmas that are quite scary if you're a kid, like the Oogie Boogie
kids.
Sequence.
Kids like to be scared. Directors like to scare kids even more, though.
Yeah,
like I think it's the combination of the two that make that. You know,
well, it's I think the classic example is Doctor Who. I think, you know, kids love the episodes of Doctor Who where it gets really quite scary, like the like Blink. I can't remember. Did you watch Doctor Who as a kid?
A little bit.
Do you remember Blink? That was the one with the statues.
With the Weeping Angels.
The Weeping Angels. That was one of the scariest things I remember from my whole childhood. Like that.
Also,
was...
the... is it The Empty Child? The Lonely Child?
Oh, Are You My Mummy?
The boy with the gas mask?
Yeah. Yeah, when it's and then how the gas mask Eldrew, and it's and he turns into it at the end. That
they grow out of your face, like oh.
Because I was talking to Pixel Girl about this, and interestingly, she thought the scariest episode wasn't any of those. It was she thought it was the one where they meet the devil at the bottom of a pit outside a black hole.
Oh yeah.
And the idea about being in space and like I think because he's in the suit if I remember right, he's in a spacesuit on this planet and then like marks start appearing on his skin and he sort of becomes like a possessed by the devil. I don't remember being scared at all by that, and that was the one that I think the BBC because the BBC I know rank all the episodes in terms of how scary they are. Hang on, I'll see if I can find this ranked Doctor Who episodes. Scary or something like, because they assign a fear factor or something like that. Interestingly, I thought that one wasn't scary at all. Oh, okay, no, this is one of those absolutely cancerous websites where you have to scroll through loads of adverts. I'm not doing that.
Get away.
But yeah, God, I mean, yeah, kids like, and I think Spielberg really gets that as well. If you look at anything that Steven Spielberg directed for kids, like I imagine it's the same in E.T., but something like Hook. Some of the stuff in that is awful.
I just remembered what else we have to look forward to on a similar note as this. The second season of...
Stranger Things!
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm really looking forward.
That's
it's actually
awesome.
Out. Hang on. This podcast is going to come out on the 28th. I think that might be the day it comes out, you know? Stranger Things season 2 release date UK... it comes out tomorrow. It comes out, so by the time this podcast is out, Stranger Things 2, people will be binging that instead of listening to this podcast, let's face it. We could literally walk away and have the rest of this podcast be silence. And no one would know. To be fair, no one's listening
so
by this point. I'm going to hazard a guess. I'm going to put my nail my colours to the sticking place and say, this is the worst episode we've ever done. Like,
it's just like... There was just, I mean, I think the fault was that the article was so what we normally talk about anyway. That we just like, we're also both knackered.
Yeah, we're both shattered. We're very sorry that your weekly scheduled lack of entertainment is even more lacking than normal.
Yeah, 100% non-content this week.
The thing is, next week it's not going to be any better because you're going to be shattered from Bath. Though you are going to, please promise me you're going to have a Schwarzburger on my behalf because I am.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Dying inside. If you are from Bath or near Bath, there was a place called Schwarzburger that is by the Theatre Royal, sort of up from Pizza Hut used to be there. It's up from O'Neill's in the middle of town, and it's the best burger I've ever had. Like every time that Chapel Choir has gone to Bath, I've taken people there, and people have said that it's changed their lives. It's been that good that the burgers have changed their lives, and I think that's an understatement, if anything. So yeah, definitely go there. Dan is going to be shattered after that. I'm going to be shattered because this is the weekend where I'm going to really try and put my thesis in the ground because I finally had a meeting with my second supervisor, which has kind of shed some light on why the results chapters have been lacking. And I'm if you readers who watch my videos will know that there was a long time when I was getting my PV inversion code working, and there was a long run that I did where I was inverting about 39 years of data. Basically, I'm doing that again, what I did the first time was correct, but what we're now doing is basically a subset of that inversion. It's difficult to explain briefly. Basically, I'm having to do another long computer run this week, and when that's available this weekend, I can just go let my blood sugar, sorry, my blood become about 70% Red Bull and not sleep.
Yeah.
And just go all out because no one's going to be around to take care of me or to tell me to stop. So I'm just going to continue to eat remainder of birthday cake that Mum made for me and drink Red Bull. And by the time you guys get back, see just how much I could have done because there are two chapters which are kind of half done, need a lot of work, but are getting there. And I'm going to be shattered. So basically what we're saying is this podcast is it's going to be shit for the foreseeable future. Don't get your hopes up. Why on earth are we asking for money on Patreon? Why did we even think that for the like fucking advertisers were ever going to want to put shit on their shit on this shit? It's going to be like a shit mountain where it's going to be a totem pole, but everything is shit. If you go from the bottom to the top, it goes shit, 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 shit. That sounded like a fucking Daft Punk song because I've had to censor all those shits. And I hope you're happy. Jesus Christ, I'm having a fucking meltdown here. I'm moving away from the computer. Oh my god, what am I doing with my life? I've got so much to do. Dan's crying. Oh, you made it this far. Well done. You made it to the fucking Easter egg. Simon has a meltdown on air. It's not even live.
Well done.
What am I doing? But no, I don't want to magnify my computer 200 times. Why would you do that? Oh, fuck me, dead. I've broken my computer. I don't even know what I'm doing. Jesus wept.
Yeah, he certainly did.
I've
got to be at the cathedral in an hour to do this Evensong thing, and I'm really excited, but I'm also a little bit absolutely terrified.
I've enabled magnifier mode on Google Chrome, and I have no idea how I'm meant to fix this.
God.
Oh no, it's good. Okay, we're good. I'm a genius, it turns out. Okay. Right, so to stop me, I f***ing hit the microphone. Sorry if that was wobbly, viewers, and I'm sorry if I just had to apologise for something that didn't affect your viewing experience. I'm going to keep going in a stream of consciousness like this, and we're going to go to Correspondence Corner. Dan, what's our first email? Hurry up, what's our first email?
We have our first email.
Hurry up, this isn't happening fast enough. Yeah. I want to be done.
George M. Emails in with a subject line, Correspondence Corner. It's quite short. And sweet, but I'm trying to try and explain it. Here we go. Dear Daniel and Simon, Saniel and Diamond, Sandal and Diamond, Satchel and Feynman, Sanchez and Thymine, Champagne and Dry Memes, Lampshades and Hygiene, Handshakes and Ice Cream. What are you up to? Kind regards, George. Which is pretty great. Oh my goodness. I think that's pretty good.
Oh my God.
Thank you, George, for that. Just kind of like, I mean, as far as the stream, I mean, this episode has been just a complete stream of consciousness. I'm glad we started with this email.
Thank you for putting George in Comic Sans as well, you degenerate afterbirth of a human being.
Jeez. Oh, God.
Making me so angry. I'm going to have some jelly beans. I've been keeping these jelly beans for runs because they give me sugar and I need it to survive the next half hour of my life. Right. Oh, it's my go, isn't it? Oh, jolly good. Let me do some work.
It is.
Okay, Olfias, you have sent us a Blade Runner 2049 review. This is just to say that we have received it. We're going to read it out next week when Dan has definitely seen the film. So I'm going to move on to Evan Mather. He's actually started off by saying, just to start off, sorry about the spelling. I have dyslexia, so sorry, Dan. As if I'm not going to care. Oh, f*** me, that's a jelly bean gone. Right, okay, I'm back. Okay, as if I'm not going to care about spelling. I've got bigger problems on my plate, like jelly beans. Well, they're not on my plate. That's the problem. Right, anyway. Hello, I'm a 15-year-old student in secondary school in Ireland. I hope to study physics in college and then go on to get a PhD in theoretical physics. Great ambition. Nice. I like it.
Nice.
I just want to say you're both great. I started listening to your podcast while studying. It makes me quite relaxed. Simon, your PhD videos are very informative, and Dan, your forehead isn't that big.
Oh, thanks, man.
Well, this email contains at least one lie. Possibly two. My videos aren't that informative. Sincerely, Evan. Thank you for your email, Evan, and I wish you all the best. Keep studying. Keep focus on your maths. That's what I say to everybody, but the maths is the most important thing that everyone forgets when it comes to physics. So keep your head down. And if you are willing to put the effort in, it is very possible. Dan, I'll calm down now. I've had my jelly beans. What's the next email?
We have an email from Jamie Mills. Questions for the Wikicast, he says. I'm currently doing networking at uni, and I'm struggling to keep focused on doing work in my own time, and I'm slacking behind slowly purely because I sit at my computer and end up doing nothing with my time to an extreme form of procrastination. I'm wondering if you have any tips for keeping focused and getting a good amount of work done in my own time. Thanks for reading, Jamie. I would say, certainly, I found that in my first year, it was very easy just to kind of like cruise and not do much, especially when you're in halls. So you're basically living on campus. The best way that I found to motivate myself was to treat the day like almost like a school day, and get out of my room and get out of halls as quick as I could, and spend most of the day in the library. Even if you know, like for most of that time, it's like half work, and then the other half you're just kind of, you know, sitting around on the internet. Even if it's in the library, you're in a space that's more conducive to work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the key thing is to isolate what precisely is distracting you. And for me, I can work on my computer and not really get distracted by social media if I'm careful. What seems to distract me is my phone. So what I did was download, I've made a video about this, an app called Forest, where it just locks, basically it bricks your phone for however long a timer lasts. And that really helped. It doesn't necessarily work all the time, and I seem to have to keep finding new strategies. I think the thing to realize is there's no one trick that will just forever rid you of procrastination. You have to keep trying to not get distracted. But I think if you can isolate what it is that's distracting you and causing you to procrastinate, you can download things. For example, for Chrome, you can download extensions that block social media for certain amounts of time. Or, you know, you can change your environment. Basically, yeah, identify what it is that's distracting you. And if it's your environment, as Dan says, get out of the house. I think that's generally a good idea anyway. But yeah, just try and be methodical about it.
No, I agree.
Oh, Pam cool. Varner sent us an email about Blade Runner 2049. Oh, well, at least somebody's seen the film.
Awesome.
So says Dan, not at all offended by that. The sex scene was probably my favourite one. I've got to say, it was a pretty great sex scene. Now, if that's not going to make you see the film, I don't know what will. You should definitely go and see it. It's great. It's a great sex scene.
Whoa.
I tell you what, I will read an email from our dear, dear friend, Hugo Wickham. Thank you for writing in, Hugo. You are
thanks, Hugo.
My top three base ones. There are only two in the choir. Dear Messrs. Clark and Moore, fair is fair. Thank you. Thank you.
Fair is the heaven.
Yeah, fair with an E on the end is fair. Catching up on the podcast on my way back from Yorkshire, and I got to the bit about game soundtracks and what have you. If I may, I would like to contribute and say that some of my favourite soundtracks are from The Last of Us and a very little known game called how would you say that? Botanicular?
Yeah, Botanicular, I'd say.
It's a rather obscure point and click game with gorgeous visuals and a wonderful, albeit bizarre, soundtrack. I've not listened to either of those, actually. The Last of Us, I imagine, soundtrack.
The Last of Us has an excellent soundtrack. I haven't played Botanicular, though.
It sounds good.
Botanicular?
I missed the days of point and click games. There was one I had called Broken Sword 2. Like, it was like the Broken Sword 2, The Curse of the Broken Mirror or something like that. Hang on, I'm gonna, because that was a genre game that was quite big in the 90s. Hey, here it is. Broken Sword 2 : The Smoking Mirror. Oh my god, it came out in 1997. Jesus Christ. I missed the days of those. I might have to go, and that might be one to play in a Game Grumps style.
Spongin'
Electric. I don't know if you
absolutely adore Hugo's sign off as Tinkety Tonk Old Fruit and Down with the Nazis, which is the only way that you can sign off an email.
but no age in a compound fraction. I've had a disappointing fraction of emails that I've had a compound fraction in. So says Simon, shame. 27, shame. And actually just 27 now, because I turned it 4 days ago. Mm. So I don't, 27 and 4/365,
yeah.
I guess. And that
old,
leaves us.
Old thing.
That leaves us one email done. Would you like to read the next email from Eric Saboya?
Oh, crikey. So we got an email from Eric. Hey guys, I recently started listening to the podcast, as tweeted. Like so many other readers, it certainly makes my morning commute bearable, although I wish the audio could be slightly louder as I keep missing those well-constructed puns while on the tube. But otherwise, keep up the fantastic work.
Oh, have a look at that.
I have a solution to your moon-sized sun fiasco, if you like it. I've ran the numbers. Yeah, I'm an astrophysicist in training. I like this sort of thing. Please also find enclosed some fanfiction. I have no clue if this idea has been played out yet, since I'm still a few episodes behind. Apologies for the poorly constructed sentences, grammar, and all those things that Dan holds dear to his heart. I'm better with numbers. Thanks for the chuckles, Eric.
Well.
Right.
This sounds like it's going to be... If it's poorly written and contains us, that sounds even better, frankly. Does Bruno Mars is gay, is the question.
Does Bruno Mars is gay? Who knows?
Right. Well, I guess we have some more fan fiction. So, Dan, do you want to take it away? Is there anything we need to know before you start reading? Like, is there any supplementary material?
Don't think so. I think we can just launch in.
All right. I'm going to lean back and enjoy.
Here we go.
I'm let back.
There are so few good things about winter, thought Dan as he stared out his window, admiring the evening sunset, whilst a cool breeze touched his forehead and ruffled his hair. The sky was rippling with pinks and reds, the perfect backdrop for the evening. Dan had been waiting all night. Wait, no, hang on. Dan can't read. Dan had been waiting for this night all week. As Dan retreated from the window and continued to baste the chicken he was preparing for dinner. Crikey. He heard the familiar sound of a key in a lock. That must be Simon, thought Dan. Although I so wish he had come... It had some form of... Oh, God. That was Freud
there.
Never
mind this being poorly written. It's poorly read.
In my defense, it's the text is rather small on my screen, and because it's an image, I can't make it any bigger.
Common problem, 1 in 5.
Here we go. Okay, let's go again.
It's something about he wished that I'd come.
Yeah. Oh God. No. next. Cashier number 2, please. Although I so wish he had some form of whistling to signify that it is in fact him and not an intruder. When Simon entered the kitchen, Dan's world transformed. Exactly. Everything felt brighter, safer, more comforting. Simon's presence was a beacon of light in Dan's life. Simon, said Dan, I'm preparing the chicken for tonight's dinner. It should be a glorious meal. Again, it's just the kind of normal, informal tone that I have with my housemate.
Yeah.
You know I'm a vegetarian, said Simon, in a tone that he often holds when talking about his thesis.
Oh my God, I was literally about to say those exact words. That is freaky,
Eric. He's got you.
Okay, right.
I just thought that tonight you might want some meat. It's been so long since you've gorged on any. I've made this coq au vin especially for you. Although there is an issue. Yeah. Oh, for fuck's sake.
I love it.
Okay. This is really funny. Yes, Simon replied hesitantly. I seem to have drunk all the vin, sighed Dan, who felt his head spinning, but this wasn't entirely the fault of the wine. So we're just going to have cock tonight, Simon said hesitantly. I guess we are. Prepare to feast yourself on my marvellous cock. Oh, for God's sake. Oh, God, I'm sweating. What's going on? Simon could smell the wine on Dan and noticed he'd spilt some near the crotch of the dungarees he was wearing. He knows I want dungarees. Amazing. Dan, you've spilt wine on you, Simon moaned. Take those off and I'll wash it out before it stains. Oh, no. I'm not sure I can read this.
Yeah, I think you need
Dan
to.
Dan removed the... Right, here we go. Come on, brave fess. Stiff upper lip.
Not just that.
Dan removed the dungarees with the same grace a snake had when shedding their skin. He could feel the cool winter's evening breeze on his legs now. In that moment of coldness, he wanted nothing more than to cuddle Simon to keep warm. There are some good things about winter, Dan thought.
I don't know why, but I was expecting you to say he felt the cool breeze caressing his naked butt cheeks. Like, you were just... Oh, you were naked underneath the dungarees.
Just standing there. Just as Dan handed Simon the garment, there was a knock on the door. Are you expecting anyone? Asked Simon. No, are you, old bean? Simon went and opened the door, and dungarees in hand. Standing in front of them was a man. He was built like a hat stand, and tall and thin. Upon him was a shabby coat, and sitting on his nose, a pair of oversized glasses. Are you Simon Clark? He asked. Yes, Simon replied, unsure of the man's intentions. What's Dan done now? Thought Simon. In that moment, the man's eyes brightened and his attention was immediately piqued. I hear you solve crimes that the police can't, the man said. That's true. Are you here on business? Yes. My world-famous cricket bat has disappeared. I suspect foul play. It's priceless. Can you help me locate it? You better come in, Simon told him. The man followed Simon into the lounge where Dan was sat on a leather wing-back armchair, lighting a pipe. How may we be of service? Dan asked. To be continued. Amazing. That was funny.
Oh my
that
God.
Was properly funny.
I like that, Eric. Well done. That is gold. We actually, come to think of it, we do still have, I think we'll have to, we will do it next week. We still have the conclusion. We have the final part of the Case of the Deleted Pixels.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So, but, that is a strong, from newcomer, Eric Savoia.
Yeah. Thank you, Eric. That was hilarious.
That, I needed that. After my mental breakdown earlier, I think I really needed that.
That was funny. And that brings us to the end. So, Simon, what have we learned today?
Oh, Christ, that was a very poorly timed jelly bean. we've learned that, there's a voice back again. Let's get Hymn Sing. We learned about Hymn Sing, which is the Canadian Songs of Praise, for 30 years. We talked about basically nothing for quite a while, including our favourite films, why kids like to be scared. We talked about the fact that you haven't seen Blade Runner 2049, and yet we are still accepting reviews. We're going to talk about that next week. I had a mental breakdown. I talked about how I nearly got mugged.
Yes, you did.
How my thesis is going, and that fairly
even song
it.
To which I have to go and rehearse in literally an hour's time. So,
all right, okay, let's speed this out then. Right, okay, hit it down.
There we go.
You know the next part of the script.
That's all for this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to us on your podcasting service of choice. You can like us on Facebook, and if you'd like to see our faces, check out our YouTube channel, Spongy and Electric.
And other thoughts on the show can be sent to us at spongyelectric@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
Join us again for another tumble down the wiki rabbit hole, and we'll see you next time.
Right, go, Danny boy.
Go. Quick.
He's got to get to that rehearsal. Eschenbaltz needs you!
God.